Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 18, 2016. I am Jason Powell on ProWrestling.net. Today, my full review of last night's WWE Raw. We have a review of the SmackDown Live house show event that went head-to-head with last night's Raw. Plus, you can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of SmackDown Live as the show airs on USA Network. Coming up after the break for non-members, we will discuss Goldberg's return to Raw. We will also be discussing some TNA notes. Bill Goldberg returned to Raw last night, and it really appeared to be a smash hit based on the live crowd's reaction to him. I'll certainly be talking more about just how good that segment was once we get into the Raw hit list portion of the show, but I do want to talk about what's next, and I say that because as favorable as the reaction to Goldberg was this week, WWE has to find a way to maintain that. I mean, it was really special to see Goldberg return to a live pro wrestling television show, a meaningful one anyway, for the first time in 12 years. And there was, you know, no guarantee that this live crowd was going to treat him like the returning hero. It had been a long time, and he was a WCW guy, just, you know, whatever the reasons. But they did give him a hero's welcome. And But I got to know, will that reaction still be there by the time we get to Hell in a Cell? Is the thrill going to be gone? They have Goldberg and Lesnar making staggered appearances for the next couple of weeks. You're going to get Brock Lesnar in Minneapolis next week. Goldberg appearing the week after that. Neither man is advertised for the Raw show that they'll be doing in Glasgow, Scotland. And now they are both advertised for the Survivor Series go-home show. And that go-home show I'm curious about. I want to see if they hold off on any physicality between the two. And I hope they do. And I'm sure they're tempted to give a big spear and a jackhammer. I'd make people wait for that. You want to have them do it to somebody, I don't know, Bo Dallas, or just, you know, somebody that's lower on the card, just to kind of give people a taste. Fine. It's kind of risky. What if he botches it and it looks really bad? But either way, I don't know that WWE can really go up from here. It's going to be very difficult. You can hope to maintain it or only drop a little bit, but it's going to be difficult because that crowd reaction was so great and it was just such a genuinely emotional moment for Goldberg. So this may have been the peak if they don't play this right. And I know they need ratings and they're going to get what they can out of Goldberg during this stretch. But I just hope they don't blow it somehow between now and Survivor Series, either by overexposure. I mean, each and every time the guy appears, I think it's just natural that the crowd, the live crowds may be into it because they're getting a rare chance to see Goldberg. But the viewers at home are the ones you have to worry about. Is the thrill starting to wear off by the time Survivor Series gets here? And it's only a couple more appearances, so that's a good thing. But we've seen that WWE can do some real damage in a couple of appearances. And I mean, and we've also seen that, again, you know, with each appearance, some of the thrill does wear off a little bit. Now, it's been numerous appearances for Shane McMahon since he came back, but think about how hot that was, how excited the crowd was to see Shane McMahon. And then, you know, the live crowd still are excited to see him. I don't know about you, but when Shane walks out on SmackDown, I'm not getting goosebumps, that's for sure. It's just like, oh, Shane McMahon's here. And I don't think we're going to go through that with Goldberg. But still, every time you appear on television, especially if it turns out to be a clunker segment, hopefully it won't be, hopefully they're going to incorporate Paul Heyman into it, they're going to pull it off, and it's going to work well. I'm still very curious to see how the Toronto crowd is going to respond to Goldberg. Are they going to treat him like the returning icon, just like Hulk Hogan, back when he faced The Rock at WrestleMania in Toronto? Are they going to remember him as the guy who ended Bret Hart's career? Do they favor Brock Lesnar because he moved to Canada? I think it's going to be really fun to see just how the Toronto crowd receives Goldberg. Is it a split reaction? Are they as excited as the crowd was last night to see him? But no matter what happens, last night, a big success for WWE. And again, we'll talk more about that in the WWE Raw hit list coming up here in a moment. Following up on a couple of TNA Impact Wrestling items, I do believe the company has resolved the music licensing issues. We broke the story on that coming out of Thursday's Impact, that there was an issue with a couple of songs that Dale Oliver wrote. They were new songs, DJ Z and Mike Bennett's entrance themes, and explained why they were pulled from the show. I don't have the specifics, but it does sound like that has been resolved. I don't know if there's additional licensing issues or not, but it sounds like those particular cases have been cleared up. I also want to clarify something I spoke about yesterday when I said that talent fears that Billy Corgan is kind of taking an "if I can't have it, no one can" approach by taking this legal action against the company. I want to make it clear, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm simply saying that it's a fear of some talent, not even just talent, but just others within the company. Some of that may be fueled by his detractors who don't want him to get his hands on his company, or just you know, they're kind of whether it's opposing factions that are going for ownership, or just people who would like to see it end up in other hands. But we don't know what Billy's goal is in all of this this whole legal dispute, aside from the statement that his publicist gave me last week. And you know, the talent doesn't know what's going through his head right now either, because he's under some sort of a gag order. Whether that's self-imposed or agreed to from a legal standpoint, I don't know. But it's not like he can communicate. So I think it's natural that talent are going to start to get a little jittery. But it doesn't mean it's not something he can't clear up the moment he is able to speak again, if that's not his goal. And I also want to stress, it doesn't mean that whoever ends up in control of this company won't file some type of bankruptcy. There's a lot of debt in TNA. And I know, you know, from talking with multiple people here over the last couple of days even, there's people predicting that no matter who ends up with this thing, bankruptcy is a very viable option for this company, that it could kind of protect them from some of the debt that they have. And so it's a move that you may see regardless of who ends up in control. And it doesn't mean, you know, there's different types of bankruptcy. This wouldn't be the, obviously, if someone's buying it, it's not going to be to buy it and put it into bankruptcy and move on. You're going to, you know, if they put it into bankruptcy of some kind, it's going to be to protect the company and to keep it moving forward. I have to say, I still don't know what makes TNA such an appealing buy for the parties who are feuding over it right now. But hopefully, when or if there's a sale, whoever ends up in control of it is going to answer some of those questions. But as far as the legal stuff is concerned, the hearing is still scheduled for Thursday morning in Nashville. There's still a chance that they could work out some sort of an agreement between now and then, and that it never gets that far. But it is scheduled for Thursday, and we don't know when the details from that hearing are going to come out, if it'll be later that day, if there's going to be an ongoing thing where we don't get our answers on Thursday. But hopefully we're going to have some clarity on that situation. Hey, before I go too much further, I do want to give people a heads up. I will be on the PW Torch Livecast at pwtorchlivecast.com coming up on Wednesday afternoon, noon Central, 1 Eastern Time. Wade Keller and I will be taking your phone calls. I'm on the show every few weeks or so, and it's my week, and I look forward to talking with some of you guys again. Again, all the details at pwtorchlivecast.com. This is my final day at the top of the Ross Report listings. I was on Jim Ross's podcast. I was his guest last week, and I will be bumped down to the second slot. I got excited yesterday when I saw that Jim noted in his blog or somewhere, maybe it was online, that he was talking with Dalton Castle. I really thought I was going to be able to say that Dalton Castle is now on top of me, but unfortunately, it's for a later podcast. J.J. Dillon will now be listed on top of me. And J.J. is a great guest. It just doesn't sound as good to say J.J. Dillon is on top of you. But I also want to point out that members are listening to that full audio review that I talked about from last night. My Q&A audio show is also up from Monday. Join us on the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net and enjoy all of our full-length audio content. If you're interested in membership, again, check out that JR podcast while you can. You might find a great deal on one-month membership. And you don't have to listen for long into the show if you don't have time, but check that out. The Ross Report podcast has your details there. But membership rates start at $7.50 a month. If you want to save some money, another way to do it is to take our six-month or annual option. The annual option brings that price down to an average of $5.50 per month. So you're going to save $2 every month by committing to annual.net membership. If you ever have questions on that, you can always hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet, or feel free to shoot me an email, dotnetjason@gmail.com. Just be sure to spell it out, dotnetjason@gmail.com. And now we enter the WWE Raw hit list portion of the show, and we will start with the hits as always, and this week we start with Goldberg's return. The return of Bill Goldberg after a 12-year absence from WWE television could not have gone better. The live crowd treated him like a returning megastar, and Goldberg delivered the best promo of his career. It didn't come off like he was given a bunch of scripted lines to recite. Rather, it seemed like he went out there, and he spoke from the heart, and played off the crowd before delivering the big line at the end about Brock Lesnar not only being next, but also being last, signifying that this will be Goldberg's final match. I assume Goldberg wouldn't say much, because he was never known for delivering strong promos, but he spent a lot of time with the mic in his hand, and this was a home run segment. The next hit is Seth Rollins and Chris Jericho. The real story of this was the ongoing saga of the Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho friendship. Owens once again cost Jericho the match, leaving me believing that Jericho will still end up being added to the Hell in a Cell match. After all, they seem to be spending more time focusing on Jericho and Owens than they are on Rollins and Owens. My guess is that Jericho wins next week's triple threat match, and that earns him a spot in the Hell in a Cell match. the question of what his character would do is far more compelling than the current feud between Owens and Rollins. The next hit is Braun Strowman against the Mile High Trio. This was the best Strowman squash match to date. The highlight was Strowman sending one of the enhancement wrestlers flying over the top rope, making a crash landing onto his partners at ringside. I also liked the way he chased down a smaller and quicker man, and that Corey Graves was right there to put that over on commentary. The post-match angle with Sami Zayn sets the table for what could be a fun David versus Goliath feud. Next up is the Charlotte interview. This was the better of the two sit-down interviews with Lita. Charlotte was so condescending and confident, she'd become an excellent promo and is one of the better heels in the entire business. The next hit is Sheamus and Big E. I got a bigger kick out of Sheamus' Facebook games last week than watching Cesaro turn the table this week, but there's no denying that the live crowd ate this up. I can't help but wonder if WWE would be better off having Sheamus and Cesaro learn quickly that they are a badass tag team despite their differences. They could have been beating teams and establishing credibility heading into this tag title match. Now, I assume they're going to beat New Day next week in an attempt to develop some late credibility. However, if Sheamus and Cesaro lose next week, my guard is actually going to be up for an upset tag title win at the pay-per-view. The final hit is the Cruiserweight six-man tag, Brian Kendrick, Drew Gulak, and Anthony Nice, facing TJ Perkins, Cedric Alexander, and Rich Swann. A minor hit for the in-ring action and the continued strong work of Kendrick. I love the way his character tagged himself into the match so that he could get the glory by locking Swann into the captain's hook for the submission win. Even though it did take an eternity for Swann to tap out. Swann continues to shine, though, as the most charismatic babyface in the division despite losing most of his matches, and Perkins appears to be winning fans over slowly but surely. Now we are into the WWE Raw Misses section. We'll start with R-Truth, Goldust, and Mark Henry facing Titus O'Neil and the Shining Stars. It's insulting to see the Shining Stars pimping timeshares and selling fake wristwatches. Sadly, this con bit is actually better than their Puerto Rico tourism gimmick. I never thought I'd see the day where there'd be a match that carried the stipulation that the babyfaces had to buy fake Rolexes if they lost. The next miss, Rusev and Roman Reigns. WWE went back to the idea of boring the crowd to sleep with a long Rusev and Lana segment in order to get the favorable reaction they so desperately crave for Reigns. It worked, but does it really change anything? Rusev finally got some level of heat for attacking Reigns and leaving him lying, but it continues to feel like this feud is running on fumes rather than building to its peak heading into Hell in a Cell. The next miss is Bo Dallas and Neville. I'm cool with the move to give Bo a mean streak. Unfortunately, there's only so serious a fans can take a guy who carries a mock campaign sign and rhymes all of his lines. Meanwhile, I was left feeling bad for Neville, who deserves so much better than he's getting on Raw. Can't they just claim his contract expired so that he can move to SmackDown and be a player? Forget the idea of adding him to the Cruiserweight division. SmackDown needs depth and star power, and I really believe he could provide both if he were given a real opportunity. Neville getting on a roll and then challenging AJ Styles sounds like a lot of fun to me. Next miss, Dana Brooke and Bayley. A poor match with a clunky finish. It looked like Dana was supposed to get the pin while using the ropes for leverage. She reached her foot out to find the ropes, but she was too far away, and instead got the clean win. I'm ready for Bayley to get her win back and just move on. Brooke continues to be a better personality than she is a wrestler at this point in her career. The last miss of the day is Big Cass and Carl Anderson. This was a match between the two, the singles match. One step forward and two steps back for Anderson and Luke Gallows. I got my hopes up when they dropped their silly comedy shtick and started kicking ass. That lasted all of 2 weeks, and then they lost a New Day again. Sure, they jumped Enzo and Cass last week, but then we saw Cass destroy Anderson in this match. The formula's tired. Anderson and Gallows lay out an opposing team once a month, and fans get excited about the possibility of creative finally getting behind them. Then they have an actual match, and the team that they laid out beats them. That is the WWE Raw hit list. I want to get into some of my bonus thoughts on Raw. I'll start with Goldberg from the standpoint that they keep billing this as a fight. I call it a match, but it really, they have been emphasizing that Paul Heyman challenged him to fight Brock Lesnar. And I wonder if that big jacket we saw Goldberg wearing last night is kind of a hint as to what we are in for. Now, Goldberg, he wore things like that during his career at times, so it's not like it's, you know, just uncharted territory. But I do wonder, with this being billed as a fight and him wearing a jacket that kind of covers up the physique, not that I think he's in bad shape, but is he in WWE shape, what he wants to be remembered for, or if it's Vince McMahon feeling like cosmetically he's not there, I'm not sure. But I wonder if this is a fight in part because he can go out there not dressed in boots and trunks, but instead covered up in some way, and we actually get the big brawl. I mean, I assume we're going to get kind of a no holds barred or a street fight type of thing anyway, so they can take some shortcuts along the way, but just something to think about. I also want to know what it's going to take for Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn to realize that the realness shines through. I got a question yesterday in the members' Q&A show about why the talking smack interviews are so much better than the mic work we get on Raw and SmackDown. And the answer is obviously that the talent are putting things in their own words. They don't have a full script for the back-and-forth exchanges with Renee Young and Daniel Bryan. They may have some bullet points, but they're mostly getting to put things in their own words. Likewise, the realness of the Goldberg promo last night shined through. He was genuinely emotional, and he seemed like he was putting things in his own words. Now, he had real moments with the fans and even the family members at ringside, and the fans ate this up because that's when Raw actually felt Raw. It was the only time that night, the entire night, that it felt that way. And really, I mean, how often do we get that? It's not every step of a choreographed entrance the fans have seen for years. It's not scripted and phony-sounding promos. Vince McMahon has to realize that his talent need to be better. That it's not that his talent need to be better actors. It's that he needs to loosen the reins and let them sell their own characters. I'm not getting my hopes up. You know, I think some of this happens at the NXT level. I just think that at his age, Vince is set in his ways, and I don't know if there's going to be a radical shift, even though there needs to be. I also got to say, WWE, as much as I get a kick out of the whole Chris Jericho storyline, they're doing a piss-poor job with Kevin Owens as champion. I mean, we're laughing at those games with Jericho, but Owens just doesn't feel credible. His new championship, the Universal Championship, doesn't feel meaningful right now. I mean, I care more about Jericho and Owens and their whole falling out or their friendship, whatever, you know, whatever's left to come here, than I do that actual championship. And so as fun as those skits are, I don't know. I mean, you just can't tell me that Kevin Owens wouldn't be more over at this point and the championship wouldn't mean more if he had been given the freedom to go out there and cut promos about himself, his challengers, and his championship. I'd also like to propose a trade. I want Raw to send the entire Cruiserweight division to SmackDown for the Wyatt family. I don't even feel strongly about the Wyatt family being part of this trade. I just want the Cruiserweight division to end up on SmackDown. But I will say, Bray's whole disappearing hocus-pocus crap, doesn't that just feel like it belongs on the show that Vince McMahon loves so much, Monday Night Raw? And meanwhile, I mean, the Cruiserweights are basically just spinning their wheels. You know, I mean, they're taking just the smallest of baby steps forward, but they, I mean, last night just kind of putting them on as late in the show as they did. Now, that doesn't have to be a bad thing if it's a match you really build up to, but it really was, and it was just kind of a six-man tag that was thrown together, that sort of a thing. I just say move them to SmackDown, ditch the whole purple ropes and making them look unique, and then the whole wannabe code of honor that they're doing, and just let these guys shine on SmackDown. Where, I mean, because SmackDown could use the depth. That's why it just shocked me that Raw gets the entire Cruiserweight division. You look at SmackDown, and the mid-card consists of, like, Apollo Crews, I guess there's Jack Swagger and Baron Corbin. There's not a lot there, folks. I think SmackDown, not that they're having a hard time filling the show now, they tend to do a really good job of filling that time. I praised them many times before, but I think they're the show that could use the Cruiserweights. And Lord knows Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan have done a great job of selling the Cruiserweights on the Classic, and if you put them back with Mauro doing the commentary and hope to keep JBL the hell out of the way, God knows what he'd say. But and then you have Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack or just in the role of general manager. I think it would do the Cruiserweight division wonders. Not to mention that I just think they'd get better opportunities on SmackDown. They wouldn't just be kind of treated as this quirky little brand that's different from everything else on the show, or at least they shouldn't be. Hey, finally today, please remember to subscribe to this daily podcast. Take a moment, rate and review us on iTunes or anywhere else that takes those type of reviews. It's always appreciated when you help spread the word about this podcast, and you can also do so when I put out the link to the daily podcast on a daily basis at Pro Wrestling Net. A simple retweet is helping. Anything you're doing to help spread the word is appreciated. Thank you to everybody who has taken a moment to do one or more of those things. I will not be back in this slot tomorrow. However, you're going to be hearing from Darren Gutteridge and Hayden Gleed as they discuss the latest Ring of Honor television show, which is finally a new show coming out of the All-Star Extravaganza pay-per-view. So look for that on Wednesday afternoon. But again, I will also be on the PW Torch livecast at noon Central, 1 Eastern time on Wednesday afternoon, so you can still get your fix of me if you haven't had enough yet. Wade Keller and I taking your calls at pwtorchlivecast.com. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.